Blog Talk Radio.
And now on Blog Talk, it's time for Rendezvous with Maggie, featuring Maggie DeVera. Maggie is a well-respected therapist with a successful practice in the San Francisco Bay Area, and she is also the founder and president of Realizing Our Youth as Leaders Incorporated, a nonprofit agency that prepares the most disadvantaged and at-risk youth for life and leadership. Maggie is also a licensed marriage family therapist, psychotherapist, clinical master hypnotherapist, sex expert, clinical supervisor, trainer, speaker, and consultant to musicians, fans, and actors. Maggie brings you expertise and advice on topics that impact each and every one of us in our everyday lives. Rendezvous with Maggie offers vital information that helps you understand yourself and others while providing skills and tools to optimize the experience of life's journey. And now, here is Maggie DeVera.
Hi, good evening, everyone. I am very happy to be here on our second show. I really want to thank everyone for supporting the show and me on our first show last week. I want to thank everyone who sent feedback, emails, texts, Facebook comments. It was extremely validating and inspiring and motivating to just try to do the best I can for the listeners and all of you. And as of 5 p.m. today, there have been over 825 listeners. So that is wonderful motivation for me to know. I mean, it means a lot because my hope is that the show will be able to reach out and be helpful to as many people possible. And I don't get paid for how many people are listening. So my objective here, it's not money driven in any way. It's just really about wanting to hopefully be helpful in whatever way I realistically can. So anyway, today's topic is actually a second part or continuation of last week's show of intimacy, and it's focusing more on the physical and sexual aspects of intimacy. And, you know, I decided to do this topic because actually last week there was just a lot more information that I wanted to get out, and I knew that a lot of people had a lot of questions, which I couldn't get to. So we're just focusing on this. And what inspired me to provide help in the sexual area of life overall in what I do in my life and even this show, you know, it came from seeing how many of us have struggled with questions or self-esteem issues or relationships or guilt and shame that always kind of comes together with that regarding sex or sexual issues and sex traumas. And when I was taking my doctorate in human sexuality, there was even so much more that I learned beyond the experience and knowledge I already had in life and as a psychotherapist and relationships therapist. And I just continue to learn more and more all the time through the work that I do. And again, along with my own experiences, I don't like to kind of practice what I don't like to preach unless I actually know what I'm talking about. So I try to come from a very authentic place and also be open to the fact that everyone has different experiences or perspectives. And I know because some listeners may have a hard time or judge this topic because they have more of a conservative opinion or a different perspective. I just want to make clear this part. Please keep this in mind, that I am a licensed and credentialed therapist in the helping profession, including sex therapy. And so my objective is always to explore topics that provides a platform for helping others and are supporting or enhancing growth and learning and healing and enhancing fulfillment in our lives, which we all need. So if you hear words or statements that seem provocative or uncomfortable, please hear it from a professional perspective. And if anything, just know that you get to hear this for free. I usually get paid for this. But anyway, please note that this show is for mature audiences only. So if you're not mature, turn off the sound or get off the phone. No, but seriously, this is for mature audiences. Okay, so my objective of this show is to help bring about psychosexual education. And that's to provide knowledge in order for people to understand, for us to understand ourselves and others, which could help decrease the guilt and the shame and judgments, and hopefully will empower us and to provide a healthier or more positive sex perspective, and then which in turn helps enhance or increase our self-esteem or our self-worth, because that is constantly a work in progress in our life. looking at how to feel better about ourselves, and because when we have a higher self-worth and self-esteem, then we make better decisions. We're okay to take risks. And anyway, I'm starting to go on a whole different tangent. But, you know, a lot of people really struggle with this topic because they're too embarrassed or to talk about it or to ask questions, or they don't know what questions to ask. I'm thinking about my mother right now. She has been, we were talking earlier, and she said, you know, there's just so many questions, and I've been wanting to ask this question even since you were a baby. And it was interesting to just kind of know that my mother, who is in her 60s, has been harboring these questions or these thoughts for all this time and has never explored it, has never approached it or tried to find out. So in a way, I'm glad that, although it's kind of weird, but I'm glad that I can provide some insight with the show. Okay, so one of the biggest secrets that I don't know if, well, biggest secrets for those who don't know is that the largest sexual organ that we have is the brain, which means, so it's the brain. So that means that we have to pay attention to our brain functioning, or our brain and neurological functioning, kind of the same thing. And so what I'm going to do today is I'm going to kind of go through a few things. I'm going to go through discussing some of the important aspects of sex, what are things to look out for that can be problematic. You know, I know that the topic of the show is enhancing passion, but in order to be able to do that, you also have to understand or address the issues that are a challenge or problematic. So I'll be discussing that. and then talking about the elements that can enhance it, enhance the intimacy or passion thereafter. However, I also want to make sure that, well, I'm going to answer some questions. I have several questions here, and some of it will be tied into the topic, and some of it just really is answering questions that people had, which I thought was very good to air, because it might strike a chord for some people. Or I always say, if it doesn't resonate with us, at some point there might be someone we know that would need to hear this information, and then we'll have it and we can share it. So hopefully that'll be helpful. Let me see. Okay. So I'm going to go through the benefits of regular sex contact. And I'm going to put something in context afterwards. So please, just for now, without judging, just listen to the list. I'm going to break it down between men and women, because, again, as I mentioned in the past show, men and women are wired differently, hormonally, obviously physically, and neurologically. So what may apply for a woman may not apply for a man in all aspects of what I'm going to be talking about today. But I'm going to start off with the health benefits for women. So research studies actually show that regular sex with a partner has been associated with more regular and fertile and lighter menstrual cycles. Also, it enhances, or it can bring about, better moods, better memory, pain relief, better bladder control, fewer colds and flu, reduced stress, helps to stay in shape. It helps in allowing you to stay in shape. It increases the youth-promoting hormone, DHEA. And then it also increases testosterone and estrogen. And actually, it also helps with weight control, because calorie-wise, sex, on an average, this is an average, because depending upon your gender or your weight, this can vary. But on an average, sex can burn about 200 calories per half hour, and that's kind of in contrast to yoga is 114, and dancing is 129 calories per half hour, and weight training and walking is 153. So just kind of looking at the numbers, that can show how the fitness part of it helps with weight control and shape. Okay, so that's kind of for females. For men, regular sex with a partner has been associated with, and there's much more physical stuff to this, increased heart rate variability. With the increased heart variability, it's a sign of actually a healthier heart and can produce a calmer mind. So when men say that this is, you know, they need this for stress relief, there is an absolute direct connection and link to that. Improved heart cardiovascular functioning. And actually, it says three times of sex a week decreases risk of heart attack or stroke by half. By half of what? I don't know, but it says by half. It has a higher testosterone level, which it brings about a higher testosterone level, which means stronger bones or muscles. It improves your prostate functioning and improves sleep. And actually, it was written that the women's tendencies, or Yeah, women's tendencies of withholding sex from your male partner can actually be physically unhealthy for them. So before anyone gets excited or gets upset about those facts, and again, those are what research studies show. I'm going to put this in context. Because it's also important to note this, that what was discussed here is basically based on the fact that these are with partners who have a healthy, trusting, committed relationship. It's important to note that, a healthy, trusting, committed relationship. So regular sex, contact with your partner, but partnership that is a healthier, trusting, committed relationship is what reaps those benefits, because actually, if we're not in a healthy relationship, there is anxiety, there is depression, the stress that comes along with these issues, which outweigh the physical, emotional, mental benefits that I had just gone through. And the study actually showed also that the happiest people are those who are married who had regular sex. Okay, so that's just some stats there, and some people might be saying, yeah, well, okay, well, how do we get to that point? So we'll be touching on that. Now, please keep in mind, this is a short show that will be covering things that, again, can take weeks to discuss, but I'm trying to do an overview so that if anything clicks for you, you'll have a piece of the pie or a piece of knowledge, and hopefully be able to reach out and find out more information or get some more support regarding this or get some treatment. Also, I'm going to break down some other stuff between males and females. So males and females, we want to know kind of what can enhance the attraction or stimulation towards our partner. And I'm just going to give a few pieces here. So the primary needs, aside from being loved, to love and be loved, women need to feel cared for and understood and respected. So I always kind of remember those three things: to feel cared for, understood, and respected. And that's not to say that all these other elements are important, but this is what has been shown to have been the three primary needs of females. Men or males need to feel that they are trusted or needed and appreciated or accepted. So, again, those are the three primary needs aside from to love and be loved. And women also like to feel like they're with someone strong and they can feel safe with. And that's why sometimes women can feel attracted to the bad boys, because of the perception of their strength or their power. But there's a whole bunch of other elements that are complications in that perspective, because that is not, you know, being attracted to a bad boy is not going to keep you in a healthy, stable, or consistently stable emotional state. But again, that's another show. Okay, men can be very attractive. Or what they can find very attractive is when they can feel successful in making their partner happy. So often I hear almost every single male client that are dealing with relationship issues say, I just want to make her happy. I just want to know I can make her happy, or she's never happy. And so feeling successful in making their partner happy is a huge motivation. And actually, men can lose interest if they feel that there's nothing they can do to make themselves, to make their partner happy. They can start to look towards what can stimulate them elsewhere. You know, another thing that where they can lose interest if is if something can seem too easy. So it's on the other side of the spectrum. You know, there seems to be a higher level of testosterone that is triggered or stimulated when there is more of a challenge, because males by nature are more hunters innately. Of course, when I say males and females, I am not talking about every single male and female in this world. There's no one can say 100% that anyone is 100% of anything. But this is, again, like I said last week, this is more of the innate or inherent nature of males and females. All kinds of things can throw it off, like traumas, unresolved issues, different genetic factors, physical, mental health. So those are the other things to look at. But again, this is discussing more of the innate, inherent nature. Okay. Let's see. One other thing is that men initially and primarily respond to visual cues. They're very much more visually stimulated than females. And women respond initially and primarily to their emotional needs being met. So it's kind of like, can I feel safe with this person? Or how do I feel about this person? That can be the initial attraction. Again, unless someone is dealing with some other types of traumas and are dealing with unresolved issues and are drawn to things from because of a very unhealthy history or pattern of what they're familiar with. So that's another thing. But how a woman feels that someone can make them feel is usually what they can respond to initially. So kind of can sum it up in terms of men have to be more physically and sexually stimulated in order to feel deep or to get deeper or feel emotionally connected in a relationship. So the physical and sexual stimulation or connection brings about more of the emotional stimulation and connection. For females, women need to feel more emotionally connected to enhance their sexual stimulation. So at some point, there's a midpoint for both, where both genders can meet. And again, I'm speaking of both genders, male and female together. So I'm not referring right now to the LGBTQ community, but although there's still the inherent parts of the male-female aspects that everyone falls into. So that's kind of an overview. I always say that I don't want to sound like a classroom or a workshop, but it's hard in a radio show where there's no one to talk back to unless there's someone that I'm speaking to directly. So at this point, we will allow for some call-ins. If anyone wants to call in, I can address some of the stuff. Some people are embarrassed to call in, so they've emailed or they have provided questions that I'll be answering. And so in a moment, we're going to get to the the questions and the questions and then some other stuff. All right.
Have you always always wanted to make a difference but weren't quite sure how to do it? Royal, or Realizing Our Youth as Leaders, Inc., is a nonprofit agency dedicated to preparing youth for life and leadership. Royal was created in response to a great need for providing effective services for the most disadvantaged and high-risk youth who are consistently falling through the cracks. Royal has been successful in reaching the most challenging kids in the community with their innovative, creative, and therapeutic approaches, serving youth who have experienced significant abuse, neglect, abandonment, and living life through harsh conditions. Royal needs your help. To help sponsor a child and support the hard work and mission of Royal, visit their website at www.royalinc.org. That's royalinc.org. Or call 415-643-7117. That's 415-643-7117. Royal, helping our youth.
Hi, I'm back. You know, I just wanted to cite that the commercial that you just heard is Royal, and that is our nonprofit organization that I founded and run with a wonderful group of people and board. So if you would like any information or see how you can get involved, we always need support. We work with the most disadvantaged and high-risk kids in the community, and also we also have a therapy clinic that serves the community that allows for a low sliding scale fee. And hopefully you jotted that information, but you can Google it at royalinc.org, royalinc.org. All right, so now I'm going to get to some of the questions. Bear with me as I try to find. You know, I also want to mention that sometimes it can sound, I had mentioned in my first show that, oh, I'm so nervous. And actually, after about 5 minutes, 5 or 10 minutes, my nervousness dissipated. But some people were still thinking that I was nervous. People were letting me know this. But the reality is that that's not true. It is because in my hope to be able to speak of things in not such a dry, scripted way, I just have a lot of stuff in outline. So I'm kind of searching for the right words to describe exactly the points that I want to represent what I had just said in that came from the outline. So please forgive me if I'm kind of thinking a second or seeming like I'm confused. It's actually trying to figure out what's the best way to state my intended statement. Okay, so here are some of the questions. Let me see. I'm just going to read it. How would you approach sexual difficulties? Right. How would you approach sexual difficulties with problems in terms? I don't understand this question, Val. It says, how would you approach sexual difficulties with problems in terms of signs? What do women typically? I don't. Okay, we might have to come back to that question when we figure out what that was. Okay, here's a good one. In terms of signs, what do women typically give to show that they're open? What would be the same for men? I did have that. And, you know, again, it's kind of, well, men are far more behavior-driven, so they will do things for someone. They'll show with more acts or wanting, they're offering to do stuff. But actually, some of the other signs is they like to touch, obviously, someone that they are interested in. They have the need to touch. They will smile quite a bit, sustain that smile. They can refer back to things that you had previously discussed. And they can also appear sometimes somewhat nervous. There's a nervous element in the beginning, when in both males and females, that's present. So if they kind of look like they're fumbling, that can be a sign. Also, being able to just kind of gaze at the person they're interested in, eye contact, and it's a certain look that they can give. And I don't know if other females have experienced this. I was telling my assistant that there can also be a tendency of, you know, where they're looking at you, and while they're looking at you or into your eyes, there can be a tendency of looking at your mouth or your lips. And that can be far more of a sign than just looking at you while you're discussing stuff. You don't know if they're just interested in what you're saying. But how they look at you and where they look, and obviously many females have experienced gazes in other directions, which can, again, show a certain type of physical interest. You know, there's also an element that both men and women will share, is that they can lean into each other more and seeming far more interested in what the person is saying. Men will can be more apt to asking you what your view is on the matter. This is what is said. I don't think that I said to my assistant, well, if men are showing they're interested in you because they're seeking your view on the matter, then every man I talk to is in love with me, because everyone asks me what my view is, and that's because that's what I do is for a living. So again, it's kind of what matches with there's the element of how they're behaving with the level of interest in what you're saying. Those are they kind of have to go tandem. You know, sometimes it's also said that if they seem to mirror you, they can like what you like, or they like you, they like the food that you like, or they like the music, or they'll say, oh yeah, I like that, or they're less, this is again in the beginning, they can be more apt to explore what you're interested in. Okay, so females, there is, again, eye contact and a lot of smiling and a lot of laughing, kind of as if everything they say is the funniest thing in the world. And also kind of having that energy of, like, being excited being around that person, a big smile, just the energy overall. Although there's still kind of some level of nervousness that can be there. Touch is another thing that females can do to show they're interested in. There's some direct body language where, again, they're leaning more towards you, or they sit up straighter and their shoulders are set back more. They tend to expose their neck more. They will do something with their mouth or lick their lips or just kind of play with their mouth more, just as there's a lot of hair playing. Now, this, you know, I want to set a distinction here, because for those of you who know me, I have a very thick head of hair. I have a lot of hair, long hair, and I'm always playing with my hair or fudging with my hair some way or somehow. And then there's also more of, I've seen in the past few years, more of a habit that, especially in the younger generations, girls just kind of twirl their hair, or they'll just keep playing with their hair. And so when I saw this, I thought, okay, well, yes, I can see that, but then also you can't kind of take it to heart completely if you see someone, if a male sees a female playing with her hair, because that can be totally misread. You know, and they also say hair tossing, your head or hair tossing. And then sometimes there can be this tendency where a female can kind of pretend to dust something off your shirt, or in dust that might not even be there, or remove a lint, or find something to do that will produce some touch. So that is some of the stuff. Of course, there are many things because people also have their own different personalities. But, you know, definitely, you know, one of the things that I have seen throughout my years is that, you know, words don't, it can be very confusing to know if someone is interested. For the longest time, I never knew, and I still kind of dance at times, when someone is interested, because sometimes people just won't say anything because they're extremely shy, or they're not very good verbally. Some people can express themselves more when they write or in their music, or show them with what they're doing or wanting to be there for them. So it's important that we don't assume or fully assume that someone is not interested, or even assume that someone is interested. It kind of takes more time in getting to know how each other is, and having more of a connection, so you can kind of get how they function, and then being able to express it, being able to ask straight out. Sometimes people don't have the words, so sometimes words can be something like, you know, I'm just wondering where you're at, or what, you know, where this seems to be going for you. Those kind of questions can be very scary when someone is very shy or afraid of taking risks. Especially for males, males can have a longer response time needed. So, you know, sometimes what would be good is to even just come have a, you know, if you don't want to talk about it now, we can talk about it later. You can tell me another time, or maybe it's nothing. Just kind of be very nonchalant about it, because we can look at signs, we can know of signs, but signs can never be foolproof until we actually see not just the behaviors, but the words. So the words and the behaviors have to match. There are some people who are just, you know, great talkers. And sometimes there are people who will talk and say a lot of stuff, very romantic stuff at the moment, and they may just feel that at the moment and not feel it later on. You know, in time, you have to see, you know, interest is easy. I mean, it can be easy to just be interested in someone or have someone interested in us. But again, to have more of an authentic, deeper connection, which is the intimacy part in life that we have been talking about, that takes time. And you have to look at, do they say what they mean? Do they mean what they say? Do their words match up with their behaviors? So, okay, I'm going in a whole other direction. I'm going to stop that. Hopefully that can answer some of the questions there. Again, you know, males are very outcome-oriented. So usually if they are directly or actively interested in someone, they will... You'll see more tasks being done, right? Or more things where they'll be doing more, or not acts of service, but somewhat like that. Again, I mentioned last week there was a book called Five Languages of Love, and that breaks it down to really understanding what each person is driven by, or what motivates them, or what they want to receive or experience. So take a look at that. You can even go on their website and take the test, or have your partner take a test, or whoever you're dating at the time. Okay, So that's that. Let me think. Let me see if there's... In terms of... Oh, here's a question. What do you think of bringing in a third person or having an open relationship when there is boredom? Actually, there's another board. There's another boredom question. I'm going to read this other question at the same time. Maybe I can tag team this answer. After 2 years of being together, my partner and I are having issues with boredom. How can we get over emotional... Oh, no, okay. After 2 years of being together, my partner and I have issues of boredom. And then the other question is, what do you think of bringing in a third person or having an open relationship when there is boredom? So, yes, boredom actually settles in into many relationships and can create a lot of conflict or challenges or create more disconnect or detachment in a relationship. So boredom is a real issue. I'm going to touch on that later. And so I'm going to kind of answer this question first with the fetish and third... I'm sorry, fetish. The third person having an open relationship. So in my field, as a sex therapist, we really are conditioned to not judge people's values or lifestyle. What I look at is, what is it that serves people? Does it serve you to do this? Does it not serve you? And then there's also the big picture and the small picture. And so what I can say is that I in all of my experiences with clients or people that I know, that a majority... Yes, I can say a majority, if not all. No, I can't say all. but a majority, and I would say in the 90-plus percentile, that have explored open relationships or bringing in a third party into a committed, trusting relationship, there has been major complications or can lead to the termination of the ending of the relationship. And that in no way is coming from me judging that lifestyle or that practice. It's just factual. It's what I have seen. Although many people who can hear this may have an argument to that, and that's fine. I'm just saying that that is what I know. In fact, you know, when I was going through my doctoral studies, I had become close to someone who was there and had shared with me that, you know, he was very, very happy with his marriage that he had for over 28 years. And they had an open relationship. They were swingers, and really felt that that was a solid relationship. And out of nowhere, he said she wanted a divorce, and then kind of came clean with all of the resentments and challenges and insecurities that she had experienced during that time and all those years, and that she felt that she had compromised quite a bit. And it had just behooved him, because in no way had he thought that there was a problem. And she ended up finding another relationship with someone that she did form a committed monogamous relationship with. That's just kind of on the extreme, because this person had gone through this for 28 years. And that's the longest relationship that I know of. Now, there's the other aspect of what are one's values, because the values can shape or form how successful something can be. I won't even say successful, but it can just form our decisions and how we and our perspective, and that can lead to the outcome. So if one has a value that that monogamy is not for them, or that having some sort of, I've heard some clients and or friends or acquaintances talk about, you know, I don't believe that anyone belongs to anyone, and I think innately that monogamy is not realistic. The reality is many things in life can be a challenge for us. And so, and, you know, for some people, trusting is a challenge, or making changes or transforming into healthier or transformations in a healthier way versus what they have been used to, or the chaos that they come from. You know, that's uncomfortable. That may not be natural. It is truly about what I look at, what your values are, and looking at the fact that sometimes values can change, and also what is serving you. Sometimes really trying to figure out what is what's either more of a priority or what is more important in what you're weighing out. Is being with this partner more important and you have to compromise monogamy, or is, you know, the fact that you need to be with someone that you trust more important? You really have to understand your values and be clear with that. And sometimes it takes us, you know, experimenting or exploring these things that we question in order for us to solidify what our values are or what we want. So I'm not saying do it or don't do it. I just say, you know, be clear with what comes along with it. If you are a person that trusts and you're not really into wanting to share your partner, so you kind of create these rules. I always hear people making rules. Just know that many times those rules are broken, because especially if it involves emotions. Because one thing I always say is that we cannot control our feelings. We cannot control our feelings, but we can try and manage our behaviors or control our behaviors and alter our thoughts, which can eventually shift our feelings. But it's not just a matter of saying, well, I'm not going to fall for this person, because sometimes it just happens. And physical intimacy is one of the most significant connectors in deepening relationships. Again, unless someone has more of a history of traumas or unresolved issues that creates more of an emotional detachment. I don't know if that... So dealing with the boredom piece, you know, there are definitely things that need to happen in order to address the boredom issue. And what happens, especially because we are people, we're creatures of habit, we get used to what we do. And sometimes with being busy or being distracted, focusing on creating, let me see if I can say this differently, putting more energy and being to create more adventurous stuff or exciting things, it takes more. It's not just going to happen. You guys have to work at it. I mean, when I do couples therapy, it takes work. It takes work to make a relationship to sustain a relationship, and it takes a lot of work to keep the sexual stimulation going. Some people are just helplessly, romantically in love with the other person, and actually, there are numerology and astrology theories that point to this. So for those of you who are interested in numerology and astrology, they will actually identify who can be the right person for you, to where you will stay stimulated. But, you know, regardless of that, it still takes work. And doing different things or making yourself have a date, doing stuff that you used to do that you can't do anymore because of work or kids or school, whatever. You just have to make the time if it's important to you. And sex is a very important part of the relationship. So it takes work. Okay. I don't understand some of these questions. Let me see. Okay, here's another one. In terms of age, whether you are underage, where do you draw the line? What is too young or too old? What is the biggest age gap that is acceptable? Okay. Well, first of all, legally, I have to say that anyone is held accountable for statutory rape if there is an identifiable difference with the age gap where someone is under 18 and over 18. Now, having said that, there are different levels of the law with age gaps, you know, whether both people are under 14 or one is 14 and the other one is 18, or regardless of all of that, under 18 can always be held accountable for statutory rape. So underage thing, I don't even mess with. Now, what people decide to do with that and what the outcome will be, that can vary. But please note this, that our brains are not fully developed until way past our teenage years. You know, some say when we're 20, 21, some say 25. But the reality is, you know, our brain actually is constantly a work in progress itself. But the full development and being able to make rational choices does not happen till the brain is more developed, and that's more in the 20s. So kids really can't be held accountable when people say, well, it was consensual, or, you know, yes, she's 16, but she's a mature 16. You know, whether she's acts mature or seems mature, or have gone through a lot of stuff in life that seems to have aged her, the fact is her brain is not fully developed. Both males and females. Now, so there's the question of, you know, underage stuff, and then there's the what is an acceptable age gap. Again, that can be broken down because the age gap can be based on several issues, and one can be the maturity level. I'm sorry to say this to males. I'm not discriminating, but there tends to be more of a faster maturation, or females can tend to be or seem to be more mature than males. So, but even with that said, regardless of that, it's not so much the chronological age that can count in terms of what's an appropriate age gap, but maturity level. And sometimes people will disregard the true, how can I say, what's really going on, because they're so attracted to the other person. So I have seen many clients or couples that have a significant age gap, and I'll always hear the justification of, you know, she's a lot older than her age, or he's a lot younger than he looks, or he's, and that's fine. That can be based on maturity level, but there are other factors that can affect them, and that is life experiences can actually sometimes provide more wisdom to one. And you know, one can be older but have a lower maturity level than the chronologically younger person, but that takes time to figure out. So I can't really say what the appropriate age gap is, because it's kind of, you have to wait till you see it. I don't even know if that is hold on. Does that make sense? Okay. If anyone has any other questions about that or wants more clarification, feel free to email me or call in. So I'm going to read maybe two more questions, and then I'm going to summarize some stuff. One question is, how do you know a man is having sex with you because they're in love with you, or it's just purely out of lust? And if they are in love with you, how can they have sex with others? And that was asked by a woman. So, again, there is a difference between how males and females are wired. So, you know, I'm careful to say this because I don't want to give it to seem that it's permissible or I'm justifying, but the reality is males can truly function sexually without an emotional connection. It is truly biological. It's truly physical. It's stimulation. They have higher testosterone levels. They have hormones that drive them to seek out more of the sexual behaviors or activities. You know, I was watching a documentary one time with the son or the daughter, the former daughter of Cher, the singer, Cher, and he's now known as Chaz Bono. And he had a sex change and he became a male. And one of the things that really astonished me was how he said that he had really seen the difference in what he wanted and how much he needed of sex once he had more of the testosterone in him. It was such a significant difference of him as a female living as a male versus him actually having the sex operation and having the male hormones or more of the male hormones in him, that he just needed sex just to have sex, which was such a difference from how he felt as a woman. So, you know, with the question of how could, you know, someone or how could my partner, you know, have sex with someone else if he's in love with me or we're in love. If your values and your values as a couple or your values or his values are that you don't go outside your marriage or your relationship, then, you know, that's a whole other issue of trust and other stuff that you need to work out. But if you were just simply to go by how can someone love me and have sex with someone else, it is because, at least for males, that there can be no emotional component with sex. There can be. Some of them can say, no, that's not true for me. But I'm just saying, again, inherently. You know, and then the other part of it is, how do I know whether, you know, I'm being made love to because, you know, he loves me, or it's just out of lust? That is where you have to look at, what are they, you know, how are they with you? How are they treating you? What are their words matching up with their behaviors? Are they showing you love? Because, again, you know, men can just, even with the person that they're completely in love with, they may not have to have sex with you because they're feeling this loving feeling at the moment. It's just because they need to do it. And, you know, studies actually show that even quickies can be very healthy for males because of the need for release. There is a need for release. And again, when I had stated earlier that there's a important part to consider, that when women who have a tendency of withholding sex, withhold sex from their partners, then that can be physically, or that can be detrimental. In fact, the exact words that I heard was that it can kill your partner, which I think is a little bit more on the extreme side, but you get the point. Let me see. So I think that, you know, if you can just understand, if the question is, how can a man have sex, you know, is a man having sex with you out of love or lust? How do you know? You base it on their commitment to you, what they say to you, and is it congruent with how they treat you and what they do for you? Have they committed to you? Have they shown you that they're working on the relationship? That is the overall essence of just a loving relationship, or that they're in love with you. But men don't have to feel that they're in love with you at the moment that they are having the sexual activity. I don't know if that answers the question, but again, you know, how can your partner be in love with you if they're still having sex with others? Those are other issues. They may have other unresolved issues or traumas, or different values or different perspective, and so that just allows them to justify that, and can totally keep their love versus behavior separate. They can compartmentalize. I think I'm going to stop it at there. There's a lot more that can be said, but that's a whole other show again. I think what I remember, what the question was, which just was not written clearly, was that, how can I overcome some of the emotional barriers or issues that affect me emotionally in order for me to move forward and become more physical or sexual? And that was asked by a female, because it's interesting that to this day, a concept to males that can be very foreign is that many women, because we are wired more emotionally, there has to feel more of that security, the respect, the bond, the closeness. You basically have to like the guy, or you have to care for them, or you have to feel that they care for you in order to want to move forward physically. So, you know, this is where it can be very helpful for the communication piece to take place, because then you are being able to express what it is that you're feeling, you know, get rid of kind of the mounting resentment or bitterness. You know, for males, it is important that your partner feels validated and respected. And if there is an argument, it would be important to be able to allow some of the conflicts to be addressed and hopefully work towards some sort of solution. Now, there is another aspect where that's the main aspect, but there is another aspect that people will turn to, and it's kind of the fight, or it's another F word, but fight or have sex syndrome, where the fighting actually increases the stimulation and it gets them excited, and so they end up having sex, and that is not often the healthy way to resolve issues, because the other issues are being masked. The other issues that need to be resolved that are creating problems or conflicts in the relationship. So, again, going to the emotional part, it's important for males to understand, and many of them don't, that in order for the female to be more sexually stimulated, there has to be more, they have to feel more emotionally, or their needs are more emotionally met, or there can't be the conflict that's kind of hanging over the head. Okay, so that is that. Let me see if there's one more. I think. Okay. Oh, the question was, how can we get over emotional hurdles so that we can get to the sex part, right? You know, I'm going to touch back on that again. So I talked about communication and men understanding. There's another part, again, in that physical touch also makes a difference. I talked earlier, the last show, about the that physical touch can actually trigger or produce more oxytocin, which is a hormone that can create more feelings of attachment and trust. So physical touch can make a big difference. So that's another way to address that. Okay, so I think that's kind of it for the questions. That is a lot. And it's really hot in my office right now. But I'm going to just kind of go over a few things. So this is kind of going to be a summary. Let me see. I have notes, so I won't forget. Okay. So these are just some of the things to keep in mind in case someone thinks that there's something wrong with them, or they've judged themselves, or they've judged their partner because, you know, sex or the physical intimacy seems to be more challenged. So the issues that can impact physical intimacy or sex is, number one, I talked about neurological or brain issues, you know, chemical imbalances and mental disorders, you know, and that can be depression, bipolar disorder, dysthymia, anxiety disorders like PTSD or phobias or social anxiety, or OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. You know, it can also create a lot of performance anxiety. You know, other neurological issues can be ADD or ADHD. Personality disorders and borderline personality disorders like borderline, narcissistic, and antisocial personality disorders are pretty significant, and it can impact the relationship with and the sexual aspect of the relationship. So that's mental health issues as well. Aging can be an issue. Although there is a component, you know, aging is an issue because, you know, our organs just age with us. So we are not of the same type of organ functioning that we were when we were in high school. We process things differently in our body, our digestive system, our blood, things just age. So aging can create things that can be more of a challenge, but please know that there are also ways to combat that. There's other forms of types of stimulation. There's other forms of treatment. Sometimes it's medical. Sometimes it's just finding different things that are fulfilling. You know, so there will be things that will be impacted, like some of the ability to maintain an erection, or females to become more stimulated or not, and where they're not feeling pain. You know, like I said, there are different alternatives and treatments. I always say check in with your doctor if there's a medical issue that can be dealt with. And then also always consider going to a therapist. And I'm saying all of this stuff, and I always say the answer to many of the issues is going to an expert, whether it's a sex therapist or a family therapist or a couples therapist, and be able to address a lot of these issues that is compounding the problem. So I talked about the neurological or chemical imbalances or mental disorders. And so sometimes what comes with that, along with medical issues, is medication. And medication can very much affect sexual stimulation or performance. So it's important to look at that. And it's also important to think of, you know, people think, well, I'm on this medication, but there's no side effects sexually for this medication. But what I often ask is, are you on other medication as well? Because medications can take a different effect when we mix them in our system. So when they are producing the medication and they're testing out the medication out there in the pharmaceutical world, they are looking at it, of how it works, you know, that medication, how it works. Not many studies can show exactly how one medication will work with this exact medication, because, you know, many people can have different types of medication combinations. So medication can be a big issue. You know, emotional and brain trauma, that definitely affects us, you know, of course sexually, but in every aspect of our life. So that will affect or impact, that can affect or impact sex negatively. Drug or alcohol abuse, and that can be legal or illegal medication, prescription or non-prescription, it can affect your body physiologically, and again, can affect it, which can affect your hormones. So, you know, I had mentioned in the last week's show that marijuana is a strong link to male ED. And I know that may not be a favorite thing to hear for those who are very 420, 420 positive or supportive or engaging, but that is just a medical fact. Okay, other things, you know, toxic exposure to a lot of toxic stuff, which can be like an immense amount of caffeine or nicotine, environmental toxins, pesticides, so that can affect you as well. Sleep deprivation can also be a problem. Having untreated medical or mental illnesses, a poor diet, lack of knowledge and experience, just by itself, uncomfortable with yourself or your body, uncomfortable with looking or touching, fatigue, and then, of course, I said interpersonal conflicts. You know, there can be a lot of fighting, unresolved issues. Boredom, we mentioned boredom can be definitely a problem and very common amongst many. A distorted body image or discomfort with your body, and then, you know, guilt and shame or history of sexual trauma or emotional scars. So I'm just kind of listing the stuff that can contribute to some of the challenges or that inhibits enhancing the passion in your life. So it's important to know that part first. So what can be done? This is a list of what we've been waiting for. And a lot of it is common sense, and maybe some of it is new to other people. Please keep in mind that it's important that you also seek out, you know, a professional's advice. That's what people come to me for. I am able to work with them deeper with their issues, kind of bring in a bunch of different stuff. I do look at the medical history, any chemical imbalances, brain traumas, unresolved issues, history of abuse, you know, current issues in the relationship. So it, you know, you can kind of read the stuff and I can touch on it, but actually having a professional's advice is always a great alternative to just trying to read it by yourself or sweeping it under the rug. Okay, so what can be done? This is some light stuff and some more serious. One is to really try to ensure that you have more sleep and that you have a healthier diet. There's actually foods that can improve your brain functioning. Omega-3s, healthy fatty acids have been linked to that. There can be a lot of different foods, and you can just Google that. Look at that. I really like to follow the perspective of eating right for your blood type, because they even break it down to what foods and minerals and vitamins and nutrients you respond to from a beneficial standpoint and from a very non-beneficial standpoint, in fact, more detrimental. So you can take a look at that. That is called eating right for your blood type. So that we're talking about eating right as well. You know, stress is a big part of problems with relationships and intimacy. So learning how to counteract stress is one of the first and foremost things that we have to learn in life in general. When I'm also a hypnotherapist, and one of the main things that I just work on, regardless of what the issue is to be able to decrease stress and anxiety. So learn how to manage your stress and anxiety, and there's a variety of ways to do that. Exercise is a big way. Exercise actually is the number one factor of or approach to decreasing stress. So exercise, sometimes, even though I said medication can be a problem, can create more sexual problems, sometimes medication can actually also help. So that is something that you can look at. For people who are not into more of the Western medicine approach, there's alternative forms of treatment. There's acupuncture, which is excellent, hypnosis, which I know to be very effective because I am a hypnotherapist. There is actually, if you can find an herbologist, they can also make suggestions for natural herbs. And you know what I also like to look at? I tell my clients, you know, see what books are out there and see what calls to you. There are workbooks out there. There's There's just books written about it. And I always say the more you understand about yourself, the better. And that includes, so I'm talking about books, you know, to help you understand your stress or manage your stress, but that also means books or DVDs or teaching tools that really teach you more about physical or sexual intimacy. There's so much to learn. I am one trimester away from my doctorate in as a clinical sexologist, and I've put that on hold because I just have so much I'm going through. But I can't tell you how much information is out there. There's this constant stream of more things to learn, and learning about people and learning about, you know, sex itself, perspectives, lifestyles. So there's a lot of stuff to learn. You know, I say if it's important to you, and it really needs to be a healthy part of your life as well. And that doesn't mean when I say sex or sexual intimacy, for some people who have physical issues that inhibit that, there are other ways. You know, sex does not mean just full intercourse. It can be all kinds of different types of intimate connections that has the passion and sexual energy connected to that. So doing research on that, I have probably have about 100 books, and you know, there's tons of stuff, it's tons of information in there. Let me see. You know, a lot of times we also have, like, especially for those of us who can be more anxiety prone or depression prone, we can have more automatic negative thoughts in our head. Dr. Amen likes to call it ants, automatic negative thoughts. And so what we want to do is try to really kind of be cognizant of those thoughts, and then immediately learn how to replace it, so you can kind of eliminate those kind of thoughts. And they're basically the bad thoughts in your brain, the judgments, the negativity. Negativity will bring more negativity. I always say abundance comes from abundance. So what you have a lot of can bring about more of that. So so trying to replace or eliminate the negative thoughts. Again, exercise is very important. You know, your endorphins are triggered to make you feel better, and you appreciate how you feel, how you look. Sometimes overexposure to computer screens, TV stuff, that kind of electronic stuff actually affects your brain, which decreases your sexual libido or your hormones that stimulate the sexual aspects of you. So, you know, be mindful of that as well. Again, I said getting checked medically or neurologically. Learn to be comfortable in touching. Learn to touch and how to touch. Allow more affection between you. Just learn how to flirt. A lot of times couples who've been together for a while just kind of don't flirt anymore. Flirting is something that can keep life fun and exciting. Dropping a thought, planting a seed in someone's head. Foreplay, a lot of foreplay really actually can happen far before the sexual act itself. So, and that can be even more stimulating. Forgiveness is an important thing, because if you're going to be with the person that you're with, you've made a decision to be with that person, then, you know, problems will happen, and you have to make a conscious decision of working towards forgiveness. There's a lot of issues that can come up with couples, things that can seem unforgivable, but if you are in a relationship that you want to stay in and you want to have more intimacy, working towards forgiveness is important. I always say make a list of the positives. If you have your list of negatives going on, make sure you also can list the positives and express that to one another. It's very important that your partner, you and your partner, feel appreciated and validated rather than just kind of going through the day-to-day stuff. You know, even just saying something like, I like your hair today, or, you know, when you smile, it makes me feel happier, or I feel happier. Anything, it can be anything. We take so much for granted in life. So find the stuff, say it, appreciate it, let the other person know that you appreciate it. You know, playing games and being adventurous. Play games. Whether you're joking around, couples who can play together actually have a far healthier sexual life together. And I mean, overall, intimate life together. So playing games together, being adventurous, avoid blaming. Try to find some erotic surprises. First, find out what may stimulate the other person. Communication is so important. You have to find out what the other person may be wanting or appreciating or needing to feel. You know, it might not be something that you will do or you may want to do, but it's always important to have those discussions. Learning how to relax, learning self-relaxation. Again, that kind of goes along with the stress piece. I think I've gone through, you know, seeking treatment through a therapist, a psychotherapist, sex therapist, hypnotherapist, medical practitioner, whichever area you seem to be struggling with, seeking treatment. Is, you know, we're blessed that people, that treatment approaches are there for us. Okay, so that's kind of it. I have rushed through this stuff. There was another question about fetishes, and I'm sorry I couldn't get to it. We are almost out of time. I really want to thank again everyone that has been a support and motivator. Please forgive my approach in this radio show, where I sometimes think aloud, but like I said last week, it's important to me that I'm authentic and that I am not just kind of reading from something scripted. So next week we will be having another show, and I will be featuring a song and another musician. Look out for what the topic will be. I'm kind of between 5 topics right now and trying to decide which one I want. Feel free to write in or let us know what you'd like to hear about. Again, thank you. And if you have any further questions for me or need a referral, if I know someone that I can recommend, I'd be happy to do that. If you'd like to request for a consultation, you can call our office, and that's 415-933-7117. Short questions, I can answer through email, and I can do that pro bono. If it gets into kind of heavier stuff, that will take a lot more time. I can't answer it that quickly. But, you know, again, I want to thank all of you, and also want to point out En Vivo Band, who is, it's their song that is the intro and outro of my show, and that is the song Never Say Goodbye. If you have any questions, you can call us at 415-933-7117. Or you can look us up on the website at maggiedevera.com. Have a blessed week. Thank you very much. I send out loving energy to all of you, and look forward to connecting with you next week. Bye-bye.